Yeah, Sean, are we okay to start? Okay.
Oh, yes. Grab those two on the bus.
Okay. So welcome, everybody, to the final advisory council meeting for this format that we currently are in. Welcome. Thanks to everyone for being here. Sean, do you want to?
Yes, thank you. On the roll for the Advisory Council regular meeting of June 10th, 2015, Mr. Altshuler.
Right here.
Dr. Alvarez. Dr. Bornstein.
Here.
Mr. Brazil. Mr. Cherry.
Here.
Mr. Hayes.
Here.
Mr. Imhoff.
Here.
Mr. Kersey.
Here.
Mr. Marshall. Mr. Mast. Ms. Mayer.
Here.
Mr. O'Connor. Ms. Range.
Here.
Ms. Tam. And Chair Lutzker.
Here.
We have established a quorum.
Okay, great. Thanks. So, do we have any public comment or?
I've not received any requests.
Okay, so should we move on to the approval of the minutes?
Move approval. Second.
On the motion to approve the minutes, Mr. Altshuler.
Yes.
Dr. Alvarez, Dr. Bornstein, Mr. Brazil, Mr. Cherry,
yes.
Mr. Hayes,
aye.
Mr. Imhoff,
abstain.
Mr. Kersey,
aye.
Mr. Marshall, Mr. Mast, Ms. Mayer,
abstain.
Mr. O'Connor, Ms. Range,
approve.
Ms. Tam, and Chair Lutzker,
approve.
The motion carries.
Great. So I think we are going to quickly switch the order of numbers 4 and 5, and I will go into the chairperson's report first before we hear from Jack. Let's see. First of all, I mean, I guess I would just like to take a minute to just recognize the entire advisory council, both those here, those who couldn't make it today, and those who have served over the past many, many years. I'm not going to try to quantify in this format how many people have served. Starting in 2009, there has been the current format that we have now where all 20 members meet as a whole council rather than having some subcommittees. But I want to thank everybody, especially I want to just give us certain, well, I guess I can kind of talk about it in a little bit, but this has been a really strong council with a diverse set of perspectives. And we've brought a lot of people in. And as we discussed at the last meeting, I've prepared a presentation with a little bit of feedback that I will be giving to the board of directors prior to presenting the Urban Heat Island presentation. That presentation has been moved from June 17th. That board of directors meeting has been canceled, and we right now are on the schedule for July 29th. That is the next board of directors meeting that is actually happening. There are a bunch of cancellations due to summertime. And all board, all advisory council members are invited to that meeting. I mean, I guess everyone's invited to that meeting because it's open to the public, but in particular, if you would like to come. I've given Sean the presentation that I'll be giving. It's not agendized on here, and so it's not really open for discussion, but I did want to just give you all a sense of what I pulled together with a lot of help from the different advisory council members. But before I actually give that presentation, I did just want to bring up the issue. We tried, in pulling this report together, we went back to the website to try to find our old reports, only to find that there are no reports from prior to 2012 online. And it's our understanding that due to, I guess, low number of hits, that those were removed. I think that the general sense of this council is that that is extremely, extremely frustrating to us. We talked about it a little bit and realized that probably each of those reports constitutes about 300 person hours worth of work, each year's worth of work over 1,000 due to the reports themselves and then the presentation at the end of the year. We know that it's required by you guys with, to have those reports available due to FOIA requests. So we hope that you have them. We really would love for those to be back available, both for our own reference and for reference to the public. If those could be found, that would be extremely helpful. We were able to pull together reports, but we aren't 100% sure how final those reports were, because the ones that we were able to find in our own personal emails were marked draft. So it would be wonderful if there would be a way that those could get back up on the website. It is frustrating to have so many hours of our work and time and effort have vanished from the public record. Sam, did you want to say something about that before I?
Yeah, just briefly, and I was the first one spoke to Safed about that and heard about the few number of hits. And it occurs to me that the reason there's so few hits is there is no title page, there's no index of authors, of titles, and so people can't find it on the internet. And if they did have a title page and the authors, and Safed and I had spoken about this when I was chair last year, you know, I think those reports would get wider use. And they would also appear on Google. You know, once you start putting some titles and Google's names, things pop up on Google when you do Google searches. So I think that would be to everybody's advantage to even go back and put titles and list of the authors with those reports, if it's going to be done at all.
We did realize that one place that these definitely must exist also is in the board packets, since we gave these reports to the board over the years. And so if those could be found, that would be really helpful. I did find there was some cache of 2009 reports that are available online. But it's especially frustrating, actually, with the 2000, for me at least, with 2011, partly because that was the first year I served, but we covered UFP in 2011 and 2012, and only half of that topic is on there. So it's like an incomplete picture of our investigation into ultrafine particulate. And the 2012 material actually references back to 2011, so, and that material is not available. So, I don't know, that's just a request from us that be reinstated if at all possible.
So, Madam Chair, we actually understand your request. It turns out, I guess, with regard to all information that's generated, that's generally the protocol we rely on. We put 2 years' worth of information up on our website. That's for our governing board, that's our hearing board, that's everything. Now, it's not to say that information is not available. If anybody wants to search for an advisory council recommendation from 2010, they certainly are able to do that and put in a request, and we can provide that information. So we have that information. It's not just not on the website. So
We requested the old reports, and I was told that it would take quite a while to get them. So
You weren't told they?
No. I was told that they could be gotten. It's difficult to see the material that we've worked on in a pretty recent time frame kind of disappear, and we aren't able to access it. So when I was putting together this presentation that kind of summarizes things, it was difficult to summarize because the material was gone. So,
yeah.
I'll take that back. It has to do with just the volume of information we have, and I'm told by our IT folks that they're concerned that if we load too much up, it slows the speed. That's the issue. And so let us take that back.
Okay, thanks. I think it should be pretty small. It's, you know, 4 PDFs a year. So not, I mean, the minutes are one thing, but the reports themselves, it would be great if those were. Sorry, the minutes are very important and constitute constitute a very large amount of work, but in terms, yes. Sorry, Sean. Craig, did you want to just follow up?
Yes, I was to say, in preparing this, I looked back for the smog check things in 2001, 2003, and you know, you could find it for the minutes if you knew the subject you were looking for, but you had to know that so that Google would find it. You know, it's much nicer back to 2012 where it's in an orderly place, but even the 2001 minutes that I found, it did find them on the air. Google found them on the Air District's website. I'm just not sure where it found them.
And Sam?
Yeah, just two other thoughts. You know, the speakers that came in to talk to us, it's to me somewhat of a disservice not to give them as much recognition as they are due. They went out of their way to come and talk to us. But beyond that, my former employer got a lot of heat over the years for destroying records. And I would advise the district to keep their records as visible as possible so that they don't become headline material someday.
I mean, it's my understanding that the records are available.
Mr. Oldschuler, we haven't said the records are not available.
Yeah, the records are available.
I would not actually think you should make that accusation, actually, because the district has heard that concern and complaint in the past, and we don't destroy our records. We have that information available. It's just a matter of retrieving it.
Well, that's been a challenge, Jack.
I understand that. Yeah. I've heard the message.
Look, the importance of these reports is not just that there's a memory of them someplace. The importance of the report is that they get folded in to action to support what the district is doing. And I think back, for example, on...
Is your microphone on?
It's on. I'm not. I was just going to say, I've always sort of thought that one of the most important results of our report is to help support what the district staff is doing. And so when I see in the ultrafine discussion on particles a few years ago, extensive discussion of the issues that we dealt with here, and in fact a citation to our findings, I thought that I felt like that was a very good use, very satisfying use of our reports. So I want to make sure that, and I think that has been the case, that they have helped to inform decision making. It'd be nice to have those things archived in some fashion, so if someone wants to have them there in a PDF file someplace, or maybe even they're just more accessible to people if they want them. But I'm mostly concerned that staff has them, and I'm confident that they
now, as I indicated, Mr. Hayes, we do have them. Let me take it back so that maybe we can figure out a way to easily go to the website and look for past reports. I'm not going to do that with minutes from the advisory council, but I'll certainly do that with reports that have been prepared for and then presented to the board. I think that's what is the most critical piece that needs to be made available to the public.
Agreed. Thank you.
Yeah, I think that's
thank you very much.
Good idea.
Okay. So, Sean, do you want to bring up the presentation that I plan to give? Okay. Oh, sorry. There's a lot of little clickies. I'm sorry in advance. Okay. So, again, I plan to, on June 29th, before we present the UHI summary report, which I really want to thank Craig and Bruce and Bob for putting enormous amounts of work into. It's a really wonderful presentation, and the accompanying report, we worked really well together. But this I'm going to give before I give the before we dive into that report. I wanted to do it before so that we really are able to focus the discussion on the UHI report and not have it kind of sidetrack us into what all of the accomplishments of the advisory council, which are numerous, as you'll see. But this will be prior to that. So I guess we can just kind of walk through it, and I'll just say a little bit about what I, you know, speaks for itself mostly, but can you go ahead? So since 2009, the format has been, there have been 20 members that have met total as a full council, a lot of varied backgrounds as outlined by the law. So during this period from 2009 to 2015, there have actually been over 40 different members who've served. Many of the members who've been active during this time have been long-serving members, and I just wanted, you know, to call out particularly long-serving members, including John Holtzclaw, who served for 24 years, two 12-year tenures. Stan, we think 18 years is what we think we're at. Sam, we think 17 years, or maybe 16 years,
yeah,
something like that. Craig, that's 15 years. Harold, I think we think of 13 years. Bob, 12 years. So really some amazing terms of service. And then we've also had during that time period, three different wonderful staff liaisons, Gary Kendall, Eric Stevenson, and Safet, and I want you to tell me how you pronounce your last name so I can say it properly when I talk to the board of directors. Okay. Sean. So we have, through the council, we have brought in world-class speakers from around the state and outside of the state. They really are cutting-edge, state-of-the-art, first-rate speakers from universities, from ARB, from the EPA, US EPA, also Cal EPA, from the Energy Commission, from the South Coast Air District, from the Bureau of Automotive Repairs, from SFDPH, from MTC. And it's been an opportunity for staff to hear these speakers as well. So, during this time period, we've authored 19 technical reports, which are white papers, which extensively dive into each topic that we've heard about.
Yes.
And our focus has been on emerging rather than current issues. What is ahead? What are the areas where the Air District really needs to be looking and thinking about their programs in the not too far into the future, but a couple years into the future, what sorts of programs should they be thinking about putting together? And partly because of the varied backgrounds of our members, we've really been able to bring to the Air District a holistic perspective, both very technical and at the same time very practical. We have managed to integrate health issues, climate issues. We've looked a lot at co-benefits that can be brought by certain actions that relate to reducing air quality problems, but also in improving health and other outcomes at the same time. And then we've also focused a lot on potential unintended consequences. Again, I think the varied perspectives really helps with this due to the fact that people have so many different backgrounds and there are items that might not be traditionally considered when looking at an air quality perspective, but that people have expertise in thinking about what might happen if you do X, Y, or Z. Okay. And so since 2009, here are the topics that we've covered. We did there was a short discussion of air quality and public health, really from a community public health perspective. Also in 2009, there was a start of a two-year investigation into the greenhouse reduction goals related to AB 32. In 2011 and 12, we did a two-year investigation into ultrafine particulate matter and the health effects. In 2013, we looked at black carbon from both a health effects perspective as well as its role as a climate forcer. In 2014, as a request from the board, we looked into the Bay Area's energy future as it relates to the regional climate protection strategy. And then this year, as you'll hear later on, we covered the urban heat island effect. So just wanted to highlight a couple of the recommendations from the past that were very important and influential in some cases. And I don't have my notes with these, but I'll try to do my best. So going back a little bit further, there was a series of recommendations in 2003 that related to the Smog Check 2 program. And there were a lot of modifications that were suggested by the advisory council and adopted that resulted in reducing the gross polluters on the road. There were waivers and exceptions for certain types of cars, and those actually were the cars that were the dirtiest cars, and these recommendations related to removing, to eliminating these waivers and helping people actually improve vehicle repair quality rather than just pass the test. In 2008, there was a culmination of a discussion that was started in 2005, and this was a really important part of the Advisory Council's work, which was to really have the Air District initiate a climate protection program. In 2008, a resolution was passed by the Advisory Council asking the Air District to create this climate protection program. That was done by the district. I have it written down my notes section elsewhere when that was, and to establish a climate protection officer. And I'm happy to say that this year, that Abby Young has been put into as a climate protection manager. I'm glad that that has happened. There's now a point person. So, let's see. 2009, as part of the public health and community discussion, there was a suggestion, we recommended, and I just want to say again, I forgot to say this at the outset, that these are past recommendations from our past reports. And was asked to say that. To integrate, as opposed to just air toxics, to integrate particulate matter into the care program methodology, that was done, it is written down, I will say, when I actually give the presentation to the board, what year actually that was done in. It's in the notes section. I don't think you can bring that up, can you? Well, you probably could. Okay. But it's going to be hard to read, so sorry. Let's see. So that was done in 2013. In the revised care methodology. We also, as part of this kind of community, as part of this community and public health, can you go forward? We suggested that the district really look at their community outreach program and develop a new one. And there's been a lot of work on the Airing Ideas campaign, the public outreach campaign, so we're happy to see that has is moving forward. And then also in 2009, as part of the discussions around AB 32 GHG reduction goals, we suggested that there be a multi-pollutant planning adopted by the council, and adopted by the district. And I think that may have already been partially in the works, but that was done in, when was the first multi-pollutant plan? Was that
2010.
Yeah. Okay, so that was also part of our recommendations. Can we go on to the next slide? So in 2009, and then again in 2011, we recommended the creation of a health effects officer position. We felt that was a really important role for the Air District to have. That position was created, and Brian Bateman served in that position for a while, and I know that there is a search right now to replace, to fill that position. In 2011 and 12, we worked on ultrafine particulate, and we suggested that the district develop ultrafine monitoring strategies, an emissions inventory, there be modeling of ultrafine particulate, and that there's a contribution to the research to quantify UFP health metrics. That has been done recently in, 2013. Is that when?
Written down. Yes, we actually started measuring ultrafine PM in 2012. And since then, we increased the number of stations, and then we also have been working with UC Davis to develop emissions inventory and modeling, and also we did the preliminary health impact study.
With OEHA, right?
Yeah.
So that's wonderful that that has all gone into action. And Sean, can you? So in 2013, when we focused on black carbon, one of the major recommendations that we made was that in developing climate protection strategies, that we really take care to look at potential health co-benefits from actions and also at the unintended consequences of certain actions. We feel that moving forward with a climate protection strategy, that this will be a really key and important way to think about actions that the district will take. 2014, as we were looking at the Bay Area energy future, one of the key items that we think that the Air District can play a role in terms of energy is to work on greenhouse gas reductions from small stationary sources, including backup generators, furnaces, water boilers, and water heaters. And then the 2015 recommendations, the board will hear shortly after this report. So wanted to, also, I think before I give this presentation, give a little talk on the gratitude that we've, all feel in being able to help serve and work with the district over these last, between 1 and 24 years. and that I think we're all looking forward to the transition to the new council, and that a lot of us, I think, not to volunteer too many people, but will be willing to continue to help serve and be serve as advisors in some informal or formal way into the future. So unfortunately, we can't actually discuss this because it was not agendized. But I did want to give you all, just let you know what I would be presenting, and recognize all of you for your wonderful contributions over the past, again, 1 to 24 years. I think since there are not any more comments, or cannot be any comments, I think we can move on to Jack, kind of agenda item number 4, to the transition update. I think it flows nicely into that. And
yes, it does, Madam Chair. And so I too am here to offer my my appreciation on behalf of staff. And a number of you have served on this body for a number of years. Others are a shorter amount of time, but I just want to reiterate your remarks, Liza, in terms of just really the contribution the Advisory Council has made. And your slides really do, I think, do a good job of hitting some of the highlights. Let me start, if you're going to allow me to do this, is to give you a little bit of an update on the district, because normally what I do as part of my remarks is to give you an update, and I'll just mention a few things. Our board meeting last week, we adopted our new budget and our fee proposal to fund the district moving forward. Our move to 375 Beale is indeed moving forward. We plan to be in there in the first quarter of next year. Our online permitting system continues to be implemented, and that is rolling itself out this year. And let me highlight a particular point here, Madam Chair. So, and it really is relating to the issue that you raised before, is we have a new website redesign that is being implemented this month. It's difficult to navigate the current website. You all know this. In fact, all of us here at staff, we just basically rely on the search part of the website to really find everything we need, and that's really not something we should be doing. So this has been a long time in the works, but this month we're launching the new website, and it should be a lot more intuitive, a lot more useful to the public in general, as well as the scientific community, as well as businesses that we regulate, and we're looking forward to that. I wanted to highlight an important policy conversation that's going on at the district right now, and it relates to a little bit of the Advisory Council. So one of the many recommendations the Advisory Council has made over the years and has really had a significant impact here in the Bay Area and, frankly, California in the whole, is your recommendation to create a climate protection program here at the district. You reminded me, I think that was 2008. It might have been before that, actually. I think it might have been 2006. But
yeah, I think it started, the decision was it started in 2005 and kind of came to a culminating resolution in 2008.
Right, and so it's prior to AB 32, actually. And so a very significant recommendation. I remember that deliberation. And I mention that only because fast forward to the conversation that we've been having in front of our governing board recently has been really a strong demand by a number of community-based organizations to regulate greenhouse gases here at the district, above and beyond that which we had already planned to. So based on your recommendation, we've been looking at sources that are not contained under the California Cap and Trade Program. You mentioned backup generators and small engines and things like that. So that was part of the staff's work. You did mention the hire of Abby Young. That's a significant step we've taken. But I want to let you know that after your recommendation, we actually started staffing up a climate protection group here. We just didn't have necessarily a climate czar or a czarina. We had a climate protection program. But we now have, I think, and Henry, correct me if I'm wrong, I think we have 7 staff. Does that sound right?
Yes, Abby's the manager, and then there are 7 staff in right. That section under Abby. That's right.
And so we've quickly come to the conclusion that's probably not sufficient. We're probably going to have to beef up that group even further. And so Mr. McKay here is going to work to try to find some money and probably so we can hire some more staff. But really what's happening is there's a strong conversation going on, and every board meeting now there is a lot of folks pushing on the district staff to step in and begin to cap the sources that we regulate. And for those of you that have been tracking the district's policymaking, we've been working on a series of rules to further reduce emissions from the refineries that we have here, five refineries. And it's under that construct that there's been a push to say the greenhouse gases from these refineries are going up and they need to be capped. Now, that cap would be in addition to the cap that's under the cap and trade program. And so we have paused because we don't want to do something that is duplicative. We are assessing this whole policy dynamic that's occurring here at the board. And that's going to play itself out in the fall when we bring our proposed rules for their consideration. But it really does give you a sense of the time span that's gone on and the evolution of the climate program and the regulatory program. It is something that is a little bit unique to California, but it's also just, I think, indicative of a larger discussion going on, and that is a recognition of the warming climate, a real concern that something needs to be done, and then applying the tools that we have available to ourselves, namely our regulatory program. And so it's an interesting time here at the district from a policy standpoint. It's a little like managing chaos because there's a lot of emotion in the room when we have this conversation. And that's as opposed to going back in time when you all were giving the recommendation to do something about it. It was a much more methodical, deliberative conversation that I wish for looking back at those times. I wish that conversation was occurring today. And I use that as an example of really the impact of the Advisory Council. It has been very instrumental. The district is celebrating 60 years this year. We started in 1955, and the Advisory Council was a much different organization back then. The Advisory Council actually wrote the rules for the district. It had a much different function, and it's evolved over time, and it's going to continue to evolve. So there's going to be Advisory Council as we move into the future. I've asked Jeff to talk a little bit about that, but I just wanted here at the outset is to truly express our appreciation on behalf of the staff. You all have dedicated your time. All that pay is important, I understand, and just joking aside. But we do give you donuts, right? Chocolate donuts in the back. But it's your time, your thinking, your recommendations have actually made a difference. This organization continues to move forward. It is on the forefront of air pollution control and climate protection. And indeed, it is a model for the rest of the country, not the least of which has to do with the fact that you all have made recommendations and it's been incorporated into the policy conversation and program as a whole and as it's moving forward. So with that, Madam Chair, if you don't mind, you mentioned the fact that your report won't be occurring on June 17th. Largely, we ran into some scheduling problems with the governing board. The chair wasn't going to be able to make it. Her schedule was preventing her from being there. She wanted to make sure she's there for your report. And so we moved it off to July, and the only date we could find was July 29th. I think that's right, July 29th. And that's the last Wednesday of July. We will go dark in August, and that's a typical step that we take. At that meeting, I'll just mention for you, is on the July 29th board meeting is going to be a table and discussion about the series of rules that we are going to undertake with regard to regulating greenhouse gases. And I think, Henry, you're probably going to present this, I think. Is that probably right?
I believe so.
Right. And so we have a series of things that we're going to be recommending, or I should say, we have in the works that seek to be able to further reduce methane emissions and other short-lived climate forcers, pollutants, as well as looking at some other regulatory initiatives as well. And we're all working on this internally, but I anticipate it to be a table with a timeline and somewhat of a schedule, if you will, as to when we plan to bring these regulations back to the board for their consideration. One of the more complex things that we are proposing is to really open up our permitting program and begin to regulate greenhouse gases as part of when the stationary sources that we regulate, when there is a change in their processes and there's a new or modification where there's a potential for an increase in emissions, and that's triggering a permit review, we're proposing to incorporate greenhouse gases as part of that. Now, that sounds very easy, and that sounds like very straightforward. Why haven't we done that to date? But frankly, it falls within a program which we refer to as New Source Review. And frankly, it's one of the most complex regulatory structures that we have, one of the most complex regulatory programs we have. Not by design, it's just by the fact that's not something we're necessarily trying to do, but it is something that really you have to, it's a lot of engineering evaluation that goes on when to look at when there's an increase in emissions, how do you then quantify not only the increase in emissions, but what is best available control technology. It's an important program. It's actually produced a lot of emission reductions over time, and most importantly, it has caused the advancement of emission control technology here in the Bay Area and everywhere. And so, as we understand it, we'll be the first in the country to begin to incorporate greenhouse gases as part of our New Source Review program. And Brian and his team are going to be instrumental in putting that together. It'll take some time. It'll be a stakeholder process, I'm sure, a lot of folks involved. But ultimately, in the end, I think it'll be an important, very substantive step towards reducing greenhouse gases from stationary sources. And we see it as staff as a complement to the cap and trade program, a very important step. But again, it represents the evolution of time and the evolution of thinking with regard to recommending the establishment of a program all the way to where we are today. And it's going to continue, we think, into the future as well. So, Madam Chair, if you'll allow me, what I'd like to do is have Jeff talk a little bit about the new advisory council. It's still being formed, and I know you would think we would have it all figured out by now, but we are trying to make sure that we comply with the intent and spirit of the legislation that was passed, and we also don't feel like we need to have this new advisory council start right away. We would rather have it fully fleshed out and defined before we begin. So let me hand it over to Jeff for a little bit, and he can talk to you a little bit about our efforts and answer any questions for you.
Okay. Thank you, Jack. SB 1415 amended our health and safety code, and that amendment is effective as of the end of this month. Actually, you know, the overall details of the modifications are not terribly complex. So this is a pretty brief description I've got here. The first important point is the reconstituted membership is seven people, seven appointed members. And as one might expect, with that decreased number of members comes a change in the position descriptions for the membership. So the position description for the new membership asks the members to be skilled and experienced in the fields of air pollution, climate change, or the health impacts of air pollution, and naturally seeking a diversity of perspectives and expertise in that regard. The term of the council members will continue to be 2 years, and so we have, the district has begun to reach out to prospective members. The board has appointed already a Stan Hayes as our first member, and that will provide for continuity as we go forward. So we've got, we've been reaching out, the district has been reaching out to prospective members and has obtained interest from those folks we've reached out to. Not yet at the point where it's appropriate to divulge their names, as there's still a conversation going on. Certainly with this membership, the district seeks a broad ability from these members to understand the way the district works and the interaction of the district with the rest of the state and nation. And So at the same time, we're going to be also seeking to identify what one might call subject matter experts, folks who have very deep understandings of specific topics that we could have a relationship with and reach out to as needed on those specific deeper topics. That's the description of the new advisory council. Pretty straightforward, really, in a way. And that's all I had, Jack, on that detail.
So we'll likely be tasking the new advisory council with this question that I mentioned earlier about regulating greenhouse gases and how that could potentially affect the cap and trade program or just the whole issue of whether it makes sense to do so. Because it is something that the board is wrestling with, the governing board is wrestling with. It is, we think, makes a lot of sense for an independent body to take a look at and make a recommendation. And so that just gives you a little bit of sense of probably where they're going to start. And Madam Chair, that completes this item. Be more than happy to take questions.
Thanks. I have some questions, but I'll let others go ahead. Bob, you have your.
So what is your current thinking about how this new advisory council would work relative to how we work? In other words, we have monthly meetings, we invite speakers, we have reports. Do you envision a different structure? What aspects might be the same?
So Bob, it's still all getting worked out, but I suspect what will likely happen is we'll pitch the question either it's the policy question, scientific question to this group itself will actually deliberate and make its own recommendation. It may or may not pull in speakers, but keep in mind there's a little bit of a different structure here. There's a set of people who we call the advisory council, and then there's a larger body of group which we're going to call
subject matter experts.
So how those two interact and how they'll actually function, Bob, is something we're still working out.
Will they still write reports? How will they get their ideas to you?
Not sure about that. I want to minimize the amount of, frankly, report writing in the future, just being 100% back with this advisory council, only because it may make more sense for the question to be pitched to that group, for them to deliberate, have the staff then try to capture their recommendations, and then invite the speaker to the next appropriate board meeting to address it. Does that make sense? It's a little bit more of a nimble, flexible approach that gets integrated into the conversation and discussion that goes on here. And as you heard from Mr. McKay, Mr. Hayes has graciously agreed to help us transition. And so I'll just make my own remarks about that. We've asked Dan to help us transition from the current advisory council to the new advisory council. He has his own thoughts about that. He may or may not want to share those. But it's all in the works still. As Dan and I were just talking with Jeff here the last few days, it is something that as it gets fully formed and defined, you'll see it in action. So,
I got to say that part of me sees this as an opportunity to continue something that's been very important to me through the years. I've been on the council for, I think, 18 years, and I figure at 10 meetings per year, that's 180 donuts, which I think, if I calculate this correctly, is 15 dozen donuts.
Although there was a hiatus, a donut hiatus for a year or so.
But I dreamed of a donut, and it almost counts. So something less than 15 dozen donuts.
And the calories?
We don't go there. This is like a family. I mean, my perspective on this was that when I'd served my 12-year term and took 2 years off, I missed this. I missed all of you and all your predecessors who through the years have sat on this council. I missed the feeling of that families have about what's important and how we solve problems together. I feel that you've laid out a fine and distinguished history, all of you. I think your dedication to this district and to the problems we've faced, and ultimately I think to the betterment of the air and the lives of people who live in the district is something that you all should be extremely proud of. I am proud of part being a part of this, just a small part. The kind of dedication you brought to this, I think, is something that I hope and am confident the new council will have as well, because they'll have you to look to. The kind of tone and tenor and intelligence that you've all brought to the deliberations through the years is something that creates a model, I think, for in many ways for what the new council will want to do. And I hope that you're serious and as you think about this, willing to share your thoughts further. I mean, Liza, I think your offer is one I hope you all feel like making. It's important to hear back from you based on all that you have learned, what you think we should be doing as we go forward. I think, Jack, I think this is in many respects a learning experience as we go forward and find out what we can do best to help the district, to help the board, and to help the people breathe better here in the Bay Area. And I have to say, one of the things that I noticed today, and I think this is the truth. If you look at this, the user is the Bay Area Air Quality Management District, but the password for today is sanguine, optimism. And I think that's that's where we are.
Well, I just want to say thank you, Stan, for your service, and then for in the future your continued service. And I do want to say that I think that asking Stan to move forward onto the new council is a wonderful, wonderful decision. He obviously brings with him a wealth of experience of serving on the advisory council, enormous technical expertise. He is one of the most diplomatic people I have ever met, extremely nice to boot, and he has, you know, informally been soliciting some of our thoughts on what we think has worked and hasn't worked that well, and what we would hope to move forward into this new council. I want to congratulate you, Jack, on your decision to move forward with Stan. I think he's just a great person to be taking on this role. I don't know if other people want to say anything. We may want to. Would you be open to hearing some of the suggestions that we may have for what has worked well? I mean, keeping it not so super specific, but
Liza, I would welcome your suggestions, and if you're so willing to give us those suggestions today, I think that would be very welcome. I meant to mention as part of my remarks, Liza, that the governing board, when it meets on July 29th, will be hearing your report, but it also wants an opportunity to recognize the advisory council as well. So I would ask all of you, if you're around and not on vacation, if you have some time to stop by. It's a difficult time to travel in the city, frankly, right now with all the construction going on. But I would ask, hopefully in the middle of July, you can, or the end of July, you can be here and get recognized by the board. and also, we'd like an opportunity to have a photo with you here today as well. Should have probably told you that beforehand, because you could have dressed differently. I get that criticism from the board if I take a picture of our governing board and I don't tell them beforehand. But we have a very, very small token of our appreciation, a certificate that we'd like to be able to give you. And maybe we can take a picture of the advisory council with your certificates, Liza, as we're all done here. And I think there's also some cake in the back as well to recognize this event. That being said, as far as the business of the Advisory Council, we very much would be interested in the thoughts and ideas and suggestions for us as staff as we move forward. You all have lived this, and we, like I said, would welcome your ideas.
Well, Craig, did you want to go ahead?
Yes, I had some ideas, like right along those lines. You know, I completely agree that it would be great to get away from the full process of writing the reports. To be a little more agile and efficient would be excellent. But not to be lost on that is the fact that if you think about you in the future having perhaps seven experts or academics, they won't be expert in everything. And I think when we functioned at maybe at our best is we had a palette of 3 to 6 speakers who presented different aspects of the same situation, and they all had a finely tuned set of research and expertise that didn't necessarily let them see the other person's perspective. And that's where we stepped in, was synthesizing that and putting it together. You know, when we heard from people that talked about generating the particles coming out of an engine, and then what happened by the time it got to the freeway, and then what happened by the time it got to the residents, those three people weren't focusing on the same problem. And so we were putting that together, you know, potentially for the first time, and trying to just make it something actionable. And, you know, I think all of our bigger recommendations kind of came like that. So not to discount the report writing, I mean, maybe there's a way to just capture these experts' discussion of the matter. But there was definitely a lot of value in that, just preparing that first draft and trying to winnow it down to what are the 3 to 6 points, as opposed to the 30 to 100 points that might have been made by the experts that we had.
Yeah. Thank you. And I think just to back that up, there's the diversity of technical perspectives that we have on this council. And I do actually think that one thing I would advise the district to be careful of, if you're really dealing with very highly technical experts, is the kind of loss of not just the diversity of perspectives, but the common sense approach. I mean, I think one of the advantages that this council has in requiring such a diverse membership is really thinking about what, you know, having people who understand what happens at the government level, you know, at the local government level, what happens at a policy level, what happens at a just average, you know, and at the industry level, you know, when you work in a business, when you, you know, and the, you know, the sister agencies. And I think that it will be important to, one of the really important things that I think that you could do to help this new council, who may be highly technical, is really brief them prior to discussion of anything about what is the regulatory framework as it currently exists for the district at the state level, because they may not know. They may be in their labs doing research, out in the field doing research, and they may not know. They may not know what the district has done, not just in terms of regulations, but up to the point at which this item is being discussed, the long history. You know, one of the nice things about this council is the long-standing membership. There's a kind of an institutional memory within the council, so bringing people up to speed and talking to them about the different community concerns as well, because they may not be, you know, they may work with communities in different parts. You know, my group, we work a lot with air pollution in the San Joaquin Valley, and we know a lot of their community concerns, but not as, you know, and we have very strong subject matter experts in air pollution control and health, but we don't know what's necessarily going on in the Bay Area. So really bringing people up to speed as much as possible with the background, regulatory background, the air district's background, and the community background is going to be really crucial. So,
can I make a comment?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, those are all great points. Also, one of the frustrating things we had was to spend a lot of time discussing something only to find out that you guys are already doing this. So I think, in addition to the regulatory background, etc., you should brief this new council on what the status within the research, et cetera, efforts going on at the district are, so that they take off from that rather than duplicating ideas that are already in practice here. And I think that's really important.
Yeah, and Bob, on the opposite side of that equation, we could probably tell you also that the Advisory Council did spend time, and I'm going back years now since I've been here 12 years. There were times in which the Advisory Council spent a lot of time on things that we had already, you know, worked all those things through. And I think this might predate all of you, maybe except for Stan or Sam, but there was a time there where there was a conversations going on about our wood smoke rule and all the things we need to do. And this was after 9 workshops throughout the Bay Area and then a second 9 set of workshops that we did. So, I hear you. That's a very, very good point. We're going to make sure that this advisory council, this new one, is briefed fully about everything we do here, which is, I think, your key point.
In the past, it would have been good for someone up here to interrupt. Maybe you didn't anticipate the council would go off in that direction.
Okay.
We always wanted to get your feedback. Just in general, it's frustrating to find out that we're talking about something that you were already considering and taking action.
That's good. That's a very good point.
Okay. Jessica?
Yeah, so just a few comments, less related to the new advisory council and more in kind of my background with the Air District and moving forward. So the Air District has really shaped my career, if you believe it or not, with their CEQA guidelines back in 2010. So that definitely, that's what kind of got me into the air quality, greenhouse gas realm of what I do at San Francisco Planning. So that was very interesting and continues to be I've continued to have quite a very good partnership with some exemplary staff, namely Phil Martin, Virginia Lau, and Henry, even though he stepped out. But they have really worked with us to really shape some really amazing legislation that we have worked on over the last 3 years. One of them requires indoor air filtration in certain areas of the city. And then most recently, we updated our construction ordinance, basically requiring that public projects have better construction equipment than what we currently have out there. So I plan on continuing working with many of the staff at the Air District on some other initiatives. We've got a lot of things in mind. So even though I may not be on this council, I still plan on having a lot of interaction with staff and moving some of those initiatives forward.
Sam?
Maybe I'm going a little sideways here, but I think I've heard the word academia is a source of some of the new advisory council members and desire. I'd like to suggest that there's some research tanks around the Bay Area that you may want to think about. And EPRI was one that comes to mind for me. EPRI represents the Electric Power Research Institute. We did have one speaker come in at the end of last year that I thought was pretty enlightening, but they've got a pretty deep scientific base down there. And I think a lot of the issues that the Air District is going to face are going to be related to energy in one way or another. So I would recommend you maybe consider EPRI as a source, and there may be other people. I think we're getting into buildings a little bit differently than in the past. Maybe there's some experts out there as well, although I can't name anyone. The closest one is our own Bruce Mask, who I think has offered a lot of expertise to us as it relates to green buildings and whatnot. On a tangent, I've been having a sort of a conversation on an email with a neighbor, an associate, and he's a real naysayer on climate change. And, you know, I hear all the, been involved with the climate issues for quite a few years, but he's pointed me at a lot of literature and things that are denying that we're in a period of global warming at the moment. And, you know, it's getting tougher and tougher to refute all his arguments because even it seems like there's some sideways traction going on by people trying to explain why some of the things aren't happening quite as predicted. But, you know, I would urge the district to be on top of I won't say it's a groundswell yet, but there's people asking a lot of questions and are challenging the premise that the climate is warming as much as predicted.
The groundswell seems to be the other way. The flooding in Texas.
There's some people out there that are pretty adamant, and it's, you know, it'd be nice to be able to have everything sorted out nice and cleanly, and I don't know how that would occur, but there are people out there that are getting pretty vocal in their opposition, and I know there's a lot of politics behind it, and libertarianism and whatnot plays right into the naysayer attitude. But rambled enough.
Yeah, just a quick comment on that. I'm trying to pull up his name, but there's I would imagine you are aware of it, but there's a wonderful researcher at Yale. Does anyone know his name? I'm trying to look it up as we speak. He specializes in climate change communication, and what he has done is he has basically kind of like a principal component analysis sort of thing of public opinion about climate change, and he has identified what he calls the six Americas in terms of climate change, and they range from, you know, one group are the, yes, absolutely climate change is happening and I am doing everything I possibly can to change, you know, I don't drive my car, I have, you know, no zero emission house, I have, you know, I'm part of the climate action groups, you know, down to the next level of, which is something like, you know, yeah, I believe climate change is happening and I'm willing to do some stuff to help it. And then, yeah, I believe climate change is happening and hope that other people are going to do something about it. And, oh, I have no opinion. And all the way down to these very adamant on the other end, you know, no, climate change is not happening and I'm going to do everything I can to make it clear that I, you know, express my opinion. And he's done research on how to message to those different groups. If I find his name, I will send that to you. But it's really compelling and interesting research to basically, it's kind of like an advertising perspective, market segmenting, public opinion on climate change. So I recommend that if that's something that you come up with, that you know, look to his work and perhaps be in touch with him. But Bob.
Yeah, one recommendation I have has to do with the visibility and the prestige of the new advisory council. And that is twofold. One is visibility with respect to the board, and the other is, let's say, with respect to the public. I think the more interaction that this new council has with the board, via reports and whatever, is good for everybody. Good for the board to get information, good for the people who are serving. You're looking for prestigious people. They want to feel that they're serving on something that has an impact. And dealing with the public, we already discussed the website. One issue that I had was correspondence. There was a lot of correspondence that went out to speakers. And the speakers are basically speakers to the old advisory council, yet the correspondence never acknowledged that. Never had the name of the chair of the advisory council. Always went out under the liaison's name. So I think anything you can do to improve the visibility, the prestige of this new council will make it easier to attract the kind of people you want to attract because they're feeling that their work is known and acknowledged.
Yeah. Thank you. I think that's important. And I that kind of brings me to one thing that I would really like to see kind of clarified, which has been a little bit muddied for me, and I know for a number of the past chairs, which is kind of the degree to which this advisory council and the future advisory council is an independent body. How much do we have say in the development of our agenda, in who we bring in to speak for us, in how our you know, and how final our reports are. And also with respect to that, you know, what to clarify further the relationship of the advisory council to both the staff and to the board. I think things have changed in the past. There used to be a number of meetings between the advisory council chair each year and the board, or at least in the executive committee. At this point, it's now once a year. To what extent is the advisory council coming up with topics on their own? Are they serving the staff? Are they serving the board? Are they serving both? I think some clarification on that would be helpful, and some more clarity on communication and what sort of communication is. We've had great liaisons, and there's been easy communication. Safet has been wonderful and easy to communicate with over this last year. But a question arises is if we Safet can only, right, Safet can say, Jack, we'd like to do this. And if the answer is kind of no, can we just go straight to you, Jack, and talk? I mean, I think it has been, I think clarifying kind of the independence and the way that the advisory council fits in with the board and the staff would be extremely helpful as this new council is formed. I don't know if other people have comments about how, if you have particular, maybe you don't feel comfortable sharing this with us in any context or certainly at a public meeting, but if there are people who you all are interested in, we are a pretty experienced group of people in the air quality community, and we may have connections to people who you want to recruit and have some sway over those people. So please use us as a resource if that makes sense to you.
Oh, I appreciate that. And as we move forward, we will likely be asking you for your help. I need to also explain another important initiative that's underway here, and I've mentioned it in the past, but we have made a lot of progress in this area. We are in the process of creating what we call our community council. And so it isn't something that is statutorily defined, but rather we see it as an important function to help us be able to communicate, interact with, and seek advice from communities. And so I'll give you a perfect example of what goes on, of why we have felt that this is necessary. During our board meetings, it's not uncommon that we get folks from the public coming to complain about something, and they'll come under public comments at the very beginning. And we are a public entity. We are subject to the Brown Act. And so we are limited as to what we can speak to the governing board about. So if somebody brings a comment, say, for example, the demolition of the Candlestick Park, this is something that recently occurred. A lot of folks in the community concerned about it. They come up, they address the board, but because it's not agendized, we can say, okay, we'll understand their concern and we'll go back and speak to these folks. Ideally, what we want to do is have a situation where we would institutionalize a group of folks that would meet regularly. And so, for example, in this same situation, we would like to be able to have a community group that would, for the San Francisco, San Mateo area, for example, it's a community council that would meet. We would ask that the local community folks come to that group so that they can have their voices heard, and we can explain in detail back to those folks the steps we're taking to ensure that the dust is mitigated to the extent possible as they demolish the Candlestick Park, and we can get from them their concerns. Are those mitigation measures effective? Are they seeing more dust? What other steps we can take? And that whole dialogue and discussion doesn't occur in the governance board. But it's a very on-the-ground, practical kind of issue going on that you were mentioning before, Liza, that frankly doesn't seem to be appropriate to be discussed as part of the advisory council. And we do have a lot of outreach. We do a lot of community group working. But if we had a routine type of mechanism to have those kind of concerns being raised, we think that would be a good thing. And that's kind of the genesis behind this community council, if you will, as an example of how that would work. And those same concerns play itself out all over the Bay Area. There's issues that continue to prop up with regard to the Port of Oakland and all of its activities, over in Richmond with regard to its stationary and mobile source issues going on there. So it's all over the Bay Area. We have resource teams. We have outreach efforts that go on in each of these areas. But we think probably there is a need for beefing up the resources in this area and really creating a much more routine mechanism where we're out in the community in a formal way, hearing concerns, and we can hear from these folks and then seek to be able to incorporate that as part of our own enforcement efforts, permitting activities, things like that. And so that effort is underway. We were, we hired two people recently. I think we probably introduced them to you. I don't remember if we've done that. David Ralston and Luz Gomez. But we have two engagement, public engagement managers now. One of them, I don't remember which, is tasked with creating this council and getting it off the ground. And we expect to do that in the fall. So I can hear more about that. In fact, we're thinking that we would invite some of you to participate formally on that group. So so stay tuned. We want to be able to brief the full governing board first, create its charter, if you will, create how that will work, and have that whole conversation. And we've put some money, we're earmarking some money in our budget for it, for community grants and things like that. Yeah, that will be administered through this effort. So there's a significant effort underway. I haven't talked about it in part because we're still in the planning stages, but that is an important initiative by the district.
Yeah, thank you. I applaud the making that a formalized group, and I think that'll be great. I hope that they, in addition to, you know, it being a place for people to voice their concerns, that it also be really a place where the concerns are really taken seriously. I think my only concern about kind of the lack of community vision from on the advisory council side, even though it seems like maybe it's not the place, I think there are a lot of times when you come up with an excellent technical solution, and the truth is that people like Jessica, who are on the ground working in the planning departments, or people who are in the communities, say, wait a minute, that's not going to work because. And so I think it's just my only caution is that sometimes the experts come up with a really beautiful and excellent and wonderful solution that's just not going to work in practical terms. So just to be aware of that limitation. So, but I think that this kind of formalized community council is a really positive, a step in a good direction. So, yeah, Frank?
Jack, I guess I have a question for you. You're talking about that. Now, is it a possibility that this new outreach council would have a meeting in, say, two counties every month? In Alameda, we have like an ag advisory, and we meet once a quarter. So then what you're doing is you break down those groups. Let's say they talk about standby generators. So the problem is, okay, standby generators. And so then you get Santa Clara, Alameda, and Contra Costa, all with the same problem. All my thought is, I'm a hands-on guy, and that's kind of how this works. And by the way, I've learned a lot in being here in the whatever 6 months I've been here. But if you, and I talked to Sean about it this morning, how many of us here have seen a standby generator actually perform? See? I mean, I saw one yesterday. I'm working down in right here in San Francisco. This thing was huge. Had an exhaust pipe that big. It was I don't know how many horse it was. It was for a 12-story Kaiser Hospital. I kind of wanted to see that start up and see what happened. That's the amazement that I was with it. So, and these little community groups that you have, you go have those tours. You go look at that, or you go look at that, or you go to look at a refinery, and then you come back once a quarter and meet with the new 7-person council and explain what that is. Does that make sense? I mean, that's more hands-on and more direct.
Right, Frank, that is the thought behind the new
and
community council.
And instead of writing a report, which lasts for how many man hours again?
Right.
I mean, and I understand it got to be done, but I just don't think there's a lot of common sense sometimes. And I'm not knocking it. I'm just saying that I look at it differently.
Well, so Frank, there's a whole side to this organization. You know, there's 350 folks here at the district. There's a whole set of people whose whole lives are dedicated to the more practical side. So, for example, this demolition of the Candlestick Park, there's a lot of on-the-ground concern that a lot of dust is getting created over there. And so they've got a dust mitigation plan that they're following. And if we had this community council in place, these folks who are real concerned in the community can come and say, listen, there's not enough going on here. What are you doing? So we can talk about how frequent they water. We can talk about the trucks, how their tires get all washed down. And if that's not doing its job, then we want to know about that. Then we would talk to the contractor that's implementing that program, who's for Lennar, by the way. And we can talk about what further steps they can. And so that's a on-the-ground, practical, roll-up-your-sleeves, what else can be done. And it's similar to your backup generator issue, because that is a big issue in a lot of places, by the way, the backup generators and you know, depending on what tier you are, tier zero all the way up to tier four kind of issues. So there's a real need in our mind to have that kind of place put in place. And there's also a need to have the scientific conversation as well. So we kind of decided, I decided some time ago, let's split it, if you will, and create it this way. The advisory council, this body here, is created in law. I wasn't thinking we should create another statutory requirement that gets held over all of our heads. Instead, let's think through and create something that works on the ground to get these issues talked about and resolved. Because I think, frankly, the Lennar contractor wants to hear the concerns as well. And if they don't think that they're doing a good job, they'll come and tell you and say, okay, we'll do some more. That's the kind of conversation needs to go on. Because there's a real concern by a lot of folks out there. And I think in that community, the soil has got asbestos in it, so there's an asbestos mitigation plan as well. So it's a lot of issues going on. Does that make sense, Frank?
Yeah, I would think that new council would meet in those, like I said, in those zones, and then once a quarter, they would meet as a whole. Uh-huh. Say, hey, I got 1, 2, 3 concerns, and then everybody's going, hey, that's our concerns, hey, that's our concerns, hey. Then go into that research and look at it. And here's a major problem or a minor problem.
Yeah, we're not sure exactly if we'll have something that meets routinely or meets on an as-needed basis. That's also something we're thinking about, because issues don't occur routinely, right?
Guess it once a quarter.
Right.
You know,
right.
That's four the kind times of a year, mm-hmm. You might not have one. So that'd be 3 times a year.
Right.
You know, so I got that.
Yeah. And then as issues come to the board, we can say we'd like to refer that issue to the community council that's in Alameda County or San Francisco County, that kind of thing. And we'll bring that up when they meet next week or the next. I mean, that's the kind of thing we're thinking will work.
Not only do we farm and have cows and stuff, but we are in construction. And talking about in our project, my view on that is they should have imploded it, had dust for 6 hours.
That was our recommendation.
And then water it down and keep it water easier than how it's doing. They're doing it now. But I've been on imploded building jobs, and they worked out absolutely well.
Yeah.
So I'm here again.
We made that recommendation. I think some of the folks who ultimately are Jessica's boss heard it, said no, we're going to slowly take it down. Oddly enough, that exposes more people to diesel particulate because they have all these engines down over there and dust. And we said that's not our recommendation as air quality professionals, but indeed it is the local land use decision makers, Frank. So that's part of the frustration. Yeah. We would have told the community all that, and did tell the community all that, but Yeah, they thought the word implode is the word they were reacting to, I think.
Well, so we did the last one I was on was a 7-story building in San Leandro, and it was done and over in 20 minutes, all the concrete was this size. Step out the rebar, and it's kind of a done deal.
Jessica.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, I have a question. In both those examples, it seems to me that staff would be the best resources to address these community concerns. They're the ones who, you know, are implementing dust mitigation programs. They're the ones enforcing them. So I guess I'm still a little confused about what the council member's role would be.
Well, I agree with you up to a certain extent. I think the public does, they see it every day, right? This is their community. and we'd like the opportunity for them to tell us, hey, you weren't out here on Tuesday and they were doing this. Can you make sure this doesn't occur? I mean, that real life kind of information comes from the community folks that live there. So that's, we'd like the opportunity to have a council of people that would hear from them and then hear that recommendation and then have it then formalized, come back to the staff. Does that make sense, Jessica? I mean, that's kind of the approach we're thinking about how we'll work. And it is a departure from how we've done things. And it just like the new advisory council, that will actually probably evolve and change over time as well. And we'll finally figure out the model that works. But for right now, we think we need to have some kind of formal mechanism where community folks can have their concerns heard. It isn't just going to their governing board, which has its own processes. They got to wait for a stationary source committee to hear it, that kind of thing. So does that? Or no? Yeah.
Or even just to our staff. I mean, this gives us an opportunity to have more of a facilitated process for a dialogue, because the ordinary interface is with an inspector on a complaint or something like that, which is very formalized and it has an endpoint that's understood. And I think all of our perception is that sometimes that's really not the endpoint people are looking for, and we need a mechanism or a process to allow people in to facilitate a different endpoint or a different discussion.
I guess sometimes, like in the Candlestick example, the community just wanted it one way, no matter what
right.
You guys were going to say. So there sometimes won't be a decision that's maybe acceptable to, let's say, the community members, and they'll come back to the board meeting.
Oh, certainly. And we wouldn't want to cut off that conversation going on with the board. But I'm just telling you my interactions with the governing board, they're frustrated a little bit by it because they say, Jack, can you look into it? That's all they can really say because it's a Brown Act meeting, when in fact there's a lot to the conversation going on about Candlestick, for example. But Candlestick's an easy one because it's timely, it's happening right now. You get into Richmond about the refineries and the modernization of Chevron. There's a lot of issues going on there. And they've got trains running through their neighborhoods, trucks everywhere. So there's a lot to the conversation and dialogue. And it would make sense to have a community group, for example, there as well. We've had a resource team. We're just trying to beef up the processes we have and make it a little bit more formal.
So would they report back to the board?
Right. We're trying to think through as to how that would work. Would there be some kind of formal thing that we could put on our agendas like we do now? We have this big staff report that goes once a quarter. There's also, Brian does a thing that shows all the penalties. We might have some kind of formalized community report, but we want to flush that through, kind of figure that out during the summer, come back in the fall.
Just a quick note on that community council. I mean, in terms of its makeup, I think that there are kind of health advocacy groups and climate advocacy groups, and I think those would be valuable people to have on there. I also think that, and Craig brought this up to me this morning when we were talking, that sometimes those community groups, the people of the community don't feel like the community groups really speak for them. And so possibly having some sort of not necessarily health-focused or environment-focused community group, but rather even just a community organizer, a community leader, a couple different, maybe someone from Richmond, someone from, the Bayview, something. I mean, some of these, West Oakland, some of these more impacted communities, having real, true community leaders rather than just the community, these CBO groups that often do speak with and for the community, but not always. So,
yeah.
Sam, did you?
Yeah, this, in my career, I ran across a number of similar issues that basically evolve around public distrust. And maybe the climate change one that I was referring to earlier was people's distrust. Frank's example is, again, distrust. I got involved at the geysers 1980 with Bob Reynolds. He was a difficult guy to work with from an industry perspective. But we evolved a program up at the geysers when people were complaining about hydrogen sulfide and what the geothermal industry was doing to the community. And we put together a program, which I gave it the name GAMP. Once I gave it a name, it had a life. We had three entities involved. We had the regulatory people. We had the local air district. We had ARB involved. We had industry, which was the utilities using the steam suppliers. And then we had the public. And everybody had a vote at the table. Industry was expected to pay. The regulators were expected to sort of manage the tension or whatnot existing. And you had these three entities sort of working together at the same table. And in that particular program, we evolved a monitoring program. And we would put the data on the table every quarter. We'd discuss the data. And it really soothed the environment up there. I did it at Moss Landing. We had another power plant down there with similar issues. Boat owners were complaining about emissions from the power plant. We put together a consortium with Doug Queaton, the APCO down there, and PG&E, and then the boat owners. And by having everybody at the table participating in the design of the project, reviewing the data, writing the report, it really helped tame things down. And it was a model that worked for me. And you were involved with, the Air District was involved with the Central Valley Air Quality Study, and that was somewhat similar, bigger in scope, but you had the agencies, you had the industry, you had the public. So you need those three entities at the table for any specific project, and then things tend to calm down pretty well. But it boils back to the distrust of the population that's in the area of potential impact.
Craig?
Yeah, I was going to follow up on just the comment that Liza mentioned is in terms of how this would be structured, something like Candlestick where there's an incident or a short-term thing, I could see this functioning very well because people could come voice their concerns, feel very open. The staff would be here. You would have a better chance to interact with them. Something that's more ongoing, though, it seems like you'd want to hear from a more diverse set of the public than just the people that witness the negative thing because maybe there's no way that you'd think there's something good about dust release. But I watched your last regular board meeting and the diversity of opinion from the public who saw it with a very nuanced way. You know, yes, they live there both as employees of the refinery, some of them just living there, some of them having family that were employees. They just had a really nuanced view of the whole balance of whether they wanted them there, whether they wanted to have greater impact on them or not. And that it seems like that would take some kind of a noticed meeting so that the other side of the community or all sides of the community, I guess, would know that that meeting was happening.
I want to also thank Craig actually found the name of the person at Yale, if you just want to put it down for the record.
Sure.
So the name of the project, it's called the Yale Project on Climate Change Communication. And the director, his name is Anthony Leiserowitz. It's Leiserowitz. So it's really interesting work, actually. Any other comments about the future advisory council or community council? Okay. I do want to just thank the Air District staff, all of you, for the time that we have all been able to spend with you all as well. It's been enriching for me, certainly, and I think for other people. I think having this format to really discuss some important issues has been wonderful, and it's nice to think that hopefully we are all helping to improve the health of the folks in the Bay Area. Thanks.
So let me read this certificate because it really does speak to that. It's in recognition of your dedicated service as an advisory council member to the Bay Area Air Quality Management District. And it is a small, very small token of our appreciation, but it because of all the time and effort that you all have spent, we do very much appreciate it. I think Stan's words, and I just want to repeat it, he said, a fine and distinguished history. And I think that's exactly summarizes, I think, the advisory council for the past 60 years. It's not going away. I don't want you to think that. It's just getting I'm going to use the word repurposed or redesigned, let me say it that way. And with Stan's help, we will be as successful as we have been for the last 60 years. So thank you very much.
Thanks. And I do want to just say one more time thanks again to Safet, to Eric Stevenson, and to Gary, and anyone else who came before them who were really the liaisons. I mean, you guys have made it. I'm sure we are not always an easy group to deal with. We're opinionated, and but thank you for being there for us and helping us along.
Thank you to Sean.
Yes, and I wish the minutes could stay up. I mean, and thank you for dealing with us as we have been.
And thank you for suggesting the modern method of doing the minutes, which saved a lot of headaches for us and for yourself, too.
Sean, are you a whiskey man? I don't know what something here we need to. A white wine, red wine man? Just FYI.
Is that okay, Brian? Or does that have to wait till after business?
I want to advise you on that.
Smart. Are there any other
Could I
comments?
Just say,
yeah, sure.
Liza, I know this was just 6 months of your term, but I have to say you've done a wonderful job.
Thank you.
You've, many chairs have done fine jobs through the years. You've really distinguished yourself and us.
Well, thank you. And I also want to really say thank you to Sam, who, as chair last year, really included me in a lot of his processes and decision-making and letting me in kind of to know what was ahead of me. So thank you. Are there any other comments that people have? This, I guess, agenda item number 6, general comments.
Well, we did set Jessica up to be chair at some point, but we're sorry, Jessica.
Is the timing
perfect? Yeah, good timing.
Okay. All right, well, as for number 7, the time and place of next meeting, I think that is maybe an irrelevant, although I suppose the July 29th Board of Directors meeting, hopefully we'll see you all there.
Can we pre-approve the minutes?
Yeah, what do we do about the minutes? Can we?
No one reads those anyways.
It's yeah.
We do.
Hey, get that in.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, what is there something?
Mr. Gallagher's correct. I mean, they are what they are. We'll record them. I think there's a tape of the meeting as well if somebody wanted to go back and get a sense for
can
what
we like might be pre-approve. Can we approve them not having seen them? I don't know. Doesn't
nope.
matter.
Okay. 6 people have stayed.
We weren't agendized for pre-approving okay. the minutes. But no.
Could I offer an applause might be in order for somebody who's put up with trying to interpret all that we've done through these years, and that is Sean. I mean, we owe Sean big time, even though we've insulted him up one side and down the other from time to time. We always really, really, really appreciate what you've done to help preserve the record.
Yes. Yeah.
And if we're giving applause, Liza, we actually like to thank you for your leadership. So if you can all join me in thanking Liza for this last 6 months.
Absolutely.
Of leadership.
Okay. Did you want to give those out now, or should we adjourn the meeting first and then what it doesn't?
We'd like to take a picture for you, and then we'll send that picture to you, by the way. But these will be... I'm just concerned you all may not be there on July 29th. How about that? For those of you that can't make it on July 29th, please take. We'll be glad to sit there and give this to you. But if you're going to be there on July 29th, I think the board would like to recognize and honor you for your service. And you can hold them up now for our picture. How about that?
Okay.
Give them back.
Should we adjourn the meeting first?
The meeting.
And then,
yeah. The meeting.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
there you go.
Here it goes. Final gavel. Okay.
All right. Hey.